I earned my degree online at Arizona State University. I chose to get my degree at ASU because I knew that I'd get a quality education, they were recognized for excellence, and that I would be prepared for the workforce upon graduating. To be associated with ASU, both as a student and alum, it makes me extremely proud, and having experienced the program, I know now that I'm set up for success. Learn more at asuonline.asu.edu.
You are now listening to the Calcio Corner Podcast with your host, Raffaele.
What's good? This is indeed the Calcio Corner Podcast, where we cover all corners of Italian football and more. My name is Raffaele. I thank you for taking the time to listen to this, the 75th episode of the Calcio Corner Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and Audioboom. Be sure to give me a follow on Twitter. My account is at ItalianoCalcio. Check the link in my Twitter bio for all the links that you need to support and listen to my podcast. So a little bit later on this episode, I will have on Patrick Kendrick. He does an outstanding job covering Serie A and calling games on the international broadcast. Does an outstanding job. So you definitely want to stay tuned for that interview a little bit later on. And we will start off this 75th episode of the podcast by talking about the Mercato rumors. It's in full swing. Rumors are flying everywhere. Plenty of believable ones, plenty of ones that are just not very believable, not very trustworthy, not ones that seem very feasible. There's a lot. I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo's being linked to Napoli. Paulo Dybala seems to be linked to half of Serie A clubs. There's just so many rumors flying around, as I said. But one, you know, interesting one that I think has a potential ripple effect that I wanted to talk about primarily here to start off this episode is the future of Gianluca Scamacca. I know Scamacca's name is not as sexy as talking about, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo or Paulo Dybala, but the Scamacca potential transfer to PSG is an interesting one because, you know, if you just think back a few weeks ago, towards even the end of the season, you know, he was heavily being linked to Inter. A lot of people thought that he would be the striker that Inter would sign, and then obviously nothing with that came to fruition. Of course, anything could still happen until anything becomes official. You know, any team could swoop in and anything could happen, but Inter obviously already locked down Romelu Lukaku, albeit it's only for a season-long loan, and then, you know, who knows what will happen afterwards between them and Chelsea and how they could potentially figure that out. Milan were also being linked to Gianluca Scamacca. It looked like we were going to have a Milan derby over the Italian striker. You know, all along, Sassuolo were kind of like putting it out there that, you know, the Italian clubs aren't going to be able to meet our demands or price. It's likely that, you know, some team abroad would have to, you know, step in for them to sell Scamacca, and that's apparently what's happening as PSG, the French giants, they're looking, as they tend to do, they like sniffing around in Italy for Serie A talent, and in particular Italian talent. There's been no shortage of Italians that they've signed, and you know they've had a lot of success with some. I mean, you think about the success they've had, obviously, with Marco Verratti. He's blossomed into a world-class player that a lot of us felt he could be when he was leaving Pescara. So they've had success with him. I mean, Sirigu had a stint with PSG that wasn't all that bad. Obviously, Buffon had the one season. They currently now have Donnarumma in goal. So, again, PSG have no problem sniffing around for Italian talent. And again, the latest one that they are now targeting is Scamacca. And it appears that they're willing to meet Sassuolo's demands of around $40 million, a little more with bonuses and whatnot. That is certainly a hefty price tag. It's not a cheap price tag. And I do think Scamacca is well worth that money. He's coming off by far. I mean, young career, he hasn't played a whole lot in the top flight level, but he just had his best season, scoring 16 goals for Sassuolo. Obviously, Sassuolo had a pretty good season under Dionisi, a bit of an up and down season, but a solid one. He was definitely surrounded with good players in attack with the likes of Domenico Berardi. Fratesi in the midfield was good. There's so many other players that helped him out in attack, and he scored 16 goals. He only started 25 games, came off the bench in 11, so, you know, obviously started more than he didn't, but it's not like he was one of these players that started 33, 34 games. So, you know, you wonder if with a few more starts under his belt, he could likely easily touch 20 goals. He's young. He's only 23 years old. He's physically imposing, a big, tall target in the middle to get crosses into. Just, again, a physical, big player that is able to go toe-to-toe with those big central defenders. And it's no surprise that PSG are lurking around. And PSG, give them credit. They've done a good job at identifying talent, identifying some young players over the, you know, the past couple of years, past decade or so, ever since, you know, they had the big money takeover. And Scamacca, again, as I said, he's the next target that they're going after. But what's interesting with Scamacca is, you know, my first initial thought when I hear that, of him potentially going to PSG, is I just hope he doesn't become one of these players that just gets buried on the bench. You know, you look at some of the players that have signed with PSG over the past couple of years. Julian Draxler came over from the Bundesliga. He essentially never materialized to PSG, never really got a whole lot of playing time. So that's part of it. So you just don't want to see that happen with Scamacca. And that is one of my concerns now. Neymar's future is very much up in the air. There's, you know, plenty of rumors that he could be leaving, although the new PSG coach that just got appointed today on Tuesday, as I'm recording this on Tuesday, July 5th, he says he wants Neymar to stay. He wants to keep Neymar together with Messi and Mbappe. Obviously, it's hard to argue with that. Why would you want to lose one of the best players in the world, one of the best talents? But, you know, of course, what else do you want him to say at this point? Because even if PSG are entertaining selling Neymar, they're not necessarily going to come out and say that. But, you know, if Neymar does depart, I think that does open up more playing time for Scamacca, and you could probably deploy Messi and Mbappe on the wings and keep Scamacca in the middle. But if you have Neymar as well, it's kind of going to be hard, at least in my opinion, to see Scamacca getting heavy starts and heavy minutes playing behind those three attacking players. And that's my concern, because if you think about it from an Italian national team standpoint, what has been like one of the big heavy criticisms of the national team over the past couple of years, a lot of it has been driven towards Ciro Immobile, right? He's been our striker. He's been our starting striker, and he's certainly come up with some big goals. And there's a mixed consensus of how we feel about Immobile when it comes to playing for Italy. We know he's undoubtedly one of the best strikers in Serie A. When he plays for Lazio, he had a great couple of seasons with Torino as well. There's no one denying his ability to score at a club level, but it's the inconsistency and the lack of big goals when he puts on that Azzurri shirt, and that's what's kind of brought a lot of criticism his way. And he's been kind of one of the lightning rods, one of the main targets from Italian fans over the past couple of years, and he's been heavily criticized, and he's been one of the guys that have been, you know, is being blamed for why Italy failed to qualify for a World Cup for a second straight time and whatnot. And then you look at who our future is when it comes to that striker position, and Gianluca Scamacca is probably first in line to replace Immobile, to become the starting number nine for Italy. And that kind of ties in with this potential transfer to PSG. If he's going to become our new starting striker for Italy, you don't want him sitting on the bench and not really playing in big minutes, not playing big minutes, not playing in big games for PSG. You don't want him being one of these players that just comes on and maybe plays in a cup game here and there, or after maybe the midweek Champions League games that PSG are in, you know, he maybe gets the next run out, or the game before in the league before a Champions League game. You want him to get those starts. He, as I said, he got, I think, 25, I said, with Sassuolo this past season. Ideally, you would love to see that push over to, you know, the number 30. And yes, PSG are in multiple competitions. As I said, they're in the Champions League. Sassuolo are not competing in any European competition. They weren't last season, so those extra games weren't there. So that does afford Scamacca some extra potential games to play in. Again, whether it's Ligue 1 games, the French Cup games, Champions League games, there will be more opportunities and more minutes to go around at PSG compared to with Sassuolo. But I'm sure if you're Mancini, you probably, you know, have some concern. Obviously, you can't tell Scamacca what to do. You can't tell Sassuolo what to do. You can't say don't make this sale. You can't say don't make this move to PSG if you're Mancini. But if he's going to probably be given the opportunity to become our primary striker for Italy, be that replacement for Immobile, and hopefully become a consistent threat and goal scoring option that, again, a lot of people have criticized Immobile for his inability to be that. You know, you don't want to see him go to PSG and not get a lot of playing time and not get consistent minutes. That does not help, you know, from a national team standpoint, what Mancini's trying to do and grow this team and usher in this new era of Italian players that are going to become starters for the national team. So, you know, that's just one of my concerns with that potential transfer. If he could go there and he could pick the brain of world-class talents like Mbappe, like Messi, like Neymar, Marco Verratti, obviously he'll be comfortable with the Italians that are on that team. if he's able to pick the brains of these world-class players and learn from them and watch how they train and watch how they study and all the work they put in. I'm not saying Scamacca doesn't work hard or train hard or anything like that, but if he could see the level of work that a top talent like Messi and Mbappe are putting in, you know, he's obviously, that's got to motivate him, right? If the top players in the world are putting in this type of work and effort, then who is Scamacca to try to maybe take the lazy route? And again, I'm not saying he does that or anything like that, but it is a great clubhouse and a great atmosphere, if you will, locker room, I should say, not clubhouse. It's a great locker room for him to go to and for him to grow in, because at Sassuolo, there wasn't that same type of leadership and same type of, you know, upper echelon talent, obviously, that PSG have. So I do think from that standpoint, a transfer to PSG is a good move for Scamacca. He can learn from the best. He could be all around world-class talent, world-class facilities and stuff like that, and competing at the highest level in the Champions League and competing for a French league title, something that he obviously can't do with Sassuolo, competing for the Scudetto, competing in Europe and whatnot. So from that standpoint, I'm all in favor of him going to PSG. My only concern, as I said, you don't want to see him just buried on the bench, limited minutes, limited starts, because he is likely the future striker for the Italian national team. And if you're Roberto Mancini and you're, you know, fans of Italy, like most of my listeners are of this podcast and myself included, obviously, you don't want to see him not get that consistent playing time and not be fresh and not help himself grow. Again, he's only 23 years old. There's a lot for him to learn. There's still a lot of growing he has to do and learning and maturing he has to go through on and off the field. And you don't want that growth, if you will, to be stunted because of a lack of playing time. So if the minutes are there and the starts are there for Scamacca, I have no problem with this. Obviously, from a selfish standpoint, I would hate to see him leave Serie A because I enjoy watching him and I won't be able to watch him on a weekly basis like I would if he stayed somewhere in Italy. But from a growth and maturity standpoint, I'm all in favor for this. As long as the minutes are there, I think it could be good for him, which then hopefully will have a ripple effect and be good for the Italian national team, assuming he is the guy that supplants Ciro Immobile as our starting number 9. So I'm going to have Patrick Kendrick on my podcast. He did appear on my podcast a few months ago, so I'm definitely excited to have him back on. He's so insightful and so knowledgeable about the game of football, and particularly in Serie A. He does a great job calling Serie A games. And if you don't know him by his name, you certainly will recognize his voice if you've watched your share of Serie A games. So definitely stay tuned and enjoy this interview. All right, let me welcome in my guest on the Calcio Corner podcast, Mr. Patrick Kendrick. How are you doing today, Patrick?
I'm very well, thanks, Raffaele. Yeah.
Glad to hear. All right, so glad to have you back on. So, you know, a few days ago, big news broke that Cristiano Ronaldo wants to leave Manchester United. His goal is to play with a team competing in the Champions League. He's most heavily being linked to Chelsea, Bayern Munich. But then there's also a report that, most interestingly for me and for my podcast, linked him to Napoli. And for as unbelievable as that may be to actually happen, I'm sure it's a long shot, but how significant of a signing would Cristiano Ronaldo be for Napoli? And would it be one that you think they should actually make if it were at all feasible and possible?
I think it would be a really exciting signing. I think it'd be a very romantic signing in many ways, you know, because I think way back when in the 80s, no one necessarily saw Napoli in the hunt to sign Diego Armando Maradona. We all know how that went. I'm not necessarily suggesting that Napoli signing Ronaldo would then see them automatically win the Scudetto. Mm-hmm. But I think he is someone who clearly wants to play Champions League football. Manchester United are not going to be doing that, which I think is at the root of him leaving in the first place. I've read a series of reports. You know, he is now taking things literally season by season. And even if he can't necessarily win the Champions League again, because as we've seen with the likes of Manchester City and Paris Saint-Germain, you know, talking in terms of teams, there's no guarantee that you can do that because so many different factors come into play. I think he's at least looking at his legacy in the competition as how many goals can I score? I need to try and get ahead almost of Messi as much as I can, right, on the basis that Messi's going to keep scoring goals in the Champions League. It reminds me a lot of, and I know there was a comparison to it throughout their careers, it reminds me a bit of Federer and Nadal, a case of Federer knew he was that much older than Nadal. It was a case of how many slams can I get ahead of him, knowing that he's going to have a few years on me where injuries permitting he's still able to play. So I've got a feeling that Ronaldo wants to play in the Champions League somewhere where he's going to be playing a lot, getting lots of opportunities and scoring goals. As you said, Bayern and Chelsea are two of the suitors. As to whether he'd be suited to them and their coaches, I'm not necessarily sure, you know, between Nagelsmann and Tuchel. But Napoli, it's strange, you know, you've got a lot of naysayers, people saying, well, you know, Napoli were reluctant to give Mertens what he wanted. He's the all-time leading scorer of the club. You know, Mertens is born in 1987, for instance. He's 2 years younger than Ronaldo. So why would they suddenly then go and get Ronaldo? But we know that Aurelio De Laurentiis, for all of his flaws, he is ultimately a showman. And you don't work in show business in Hollywood in the first place and come from that glitzy, glamoury family unless you have an eye for a star. And I've got a feeling, you know, you could make it work and balance the books. And you think, you know, can we drive up ticket sales? Can we drive up interest in the team? Can we get this superstar to come to the club? Can his professionalism trickle down and rub off on some of the other players as well? And I think it would be a fascinating prospect. I myself, when I saw the reports, I couldn't resist tweeting and saying, you know, be still my beating heart, because I think it would be absolutely fabulous. But as of today, I say it's not going to happen. But if Ronaldo leaves Manchester United, there's only so many places he can go. Whether Napoli is one of those destinations, I'm not so sure.
No, I get it from the Hollywood standpoint, the filmmaking standpoint that you mentioned with De Laurentiis. And you know, you think about De Laurentiis would love to stick one to Juventus, and you think about Ronaldo, the previous Juve player. They're trying to take Koulibaly from Napoli. So, you know, maybe that throws a little extra fuel on the fire. Speaking of Napoli, you know, their approach to the Mercato the past couple of years has been an interesting one. We saw them not willing to pay Lorenzo Insigne. You kind of mentioned this with the salary demands. They not their hometown talent like Insigne, they let him leave. As of now, they're not willing to pay Mertens and Koulibaly the salaries that they're maybe asking for. They kind of have this invisible number of like 3.5 million euro per season as like kind of a line for how high they're willing to go for the most part. What are kind of your thoughts of this approach that Napoli take with the Mercato, looking to just buy these, you know, younger players, hoping they catch on? I mean, they've done a good job. You know, you look at Osimhen, they've done a nice job with him. I know they paid a big transfer fee, but what do you make of like Napoli's approach to the Mercato the past couple of years?
I don't think it's a bad approach, all things considered. I think they got to the stage where Insigne was fairly, I think he was jaded at being in Naples and having that burden of being a hometown hero, Neapolitan, being the captain, you know, and he was never unanimously popular in Naples. And for all the great facets of that fan base, they can occasionally be quite fickle. And, you know, Insigne was often the target of criticism, rightly or wrongly. And so I think he got to the stage where he thought, OK, well, I don't want to ever play anywhere in Italy that's not Napoli. So my only option is to go elsewhere. And, you know, and I can also see the appeal just quickly on Insigne. I know that's not exactly the question you asked me, but I can certainly see the appeal if you've got a young family of going and living in North America and bringing your kids up and them speaking English and all of those different things as well. Coming back to Napoli's transfer policy, I think there's a lot of merit to it, to be honest. I mean, years ago, Arsene Wenger, I don't know whether this was an urban legend or whether there was some truth to it, but it seemed that his policy, once players hit 30, was that he would only ever offer them a one-year contract extension. That was when he was, you know, the British-style manager, whereby he would do all of the negotiations, sign all of the players, take training and so on and so forth, pick the team. And I think that was there was some truth to that, but it wasn't as black and white as that. But that was the incredible Arsenal team, you know, with the likes of Patrick Vieira, Thierry Henry, Robert Pires, you know, and even they all had to deal to a greater or lesser extent with that. And I think what Napoli are doing is, you know, Insigne, he was born in 1991. He's the same age as Koulibaly, who's in 1991. Mertens is in 87. I apologize to any of your listeners that don't compute things in terms of year of birth, but I've found that since I've switched to that Italian policy of going on the year of birth, I'm only ever 1 year out, depending on what time of the year they're born as well. Even most of those are born in the summer anyway. I think Mertens is May and the other two are June. Anyway, that's by the by. The point is, I think it's a policy that has been much maligned when it comes to Milan, because obviously they lost to Calhanoglu and Donnarumma last summer, albeit then went on to Scudetto. This summer, Franck Kessié has gone for a free transfer as well. And yet, I think there's a lot of merit to that, because the danger is, if you do cede to one player's demands, the way football is, it's all public, then the other players all come and say, OK, he's now earning 5 million euros a year, I want that. And suddenly your salary cap has not just been exceeded once, it's been exceeded four or five times, because you've got four or five senior players. Because as soon as you pay Koulibaly that extra money, even though I think he's worth it, you've got Fabian Ruiz knocking on the door, you've got Osimhen knocking on the door. You've got Zielinski, to a certain extent, also knocking on the door. And that will always be the issue that you face, to be honest. So clearly Napoli feel, between De Laurentiis and Giuntoli and the head coach as well, Spalletti, they feel that they can target the right sort of players, bring in these younger players at a lesser market value, develop them, then perhaps get a good resale value on them. And it does appear that the club's model is not necessarily to try and win the Scudetto. I think there was a great opportunity last season. It wasn't expected. And I don't want to view everything through the prism of Milan, but I think it is quite a good comparison. If you leave aside the greater prestige and history of Milan, and a lot of figures inside the club have recognized that they themselves, they've acknowledged that they feel they're almost 1 or 2 years ahead of schedule. They hadn't necessarily bargained on winning the Scudetto last season. And I think that the troubles that Juventus had and the way Inter fell away, it was there for Napoli's for the taking. It was just those two dodgy runs, 3 defeats in December, and then dropping 7 points either side of Easter with the games Fiorentina, Roma and Empoli.
No, yeah, and you know, you make a good point with De Laurentiis, and you know, it's a tough position to take, but I think when you look at what he's brought to the club, the financial stability that he's brought to the club from when they were bankrupt, so, you know, from a Napoli standpoint, a fan standpoint, I should say, it's tough to swallow, maybe seeing, you know, maybe you lose a Mertens because you can't bump up his salary a little bit, but you make a good point where, you know, you do it for one player, you open up the floodgates, and then, you know, you start to see that salary rise and rise and rise, and then you kind of get into a financial difficult position. You know, this summer, it's provided a few big returns to Serie A. The Paul Pogba to Juventus isn't necessarily official at the time of this recording, but everyone expects it to be done. Romelu Lukaku, he's back at Inter. Just speaking on terms of this upcoming season, just this one season, since the Lukaku move could potentially just be the one-year loan, which do you think is a more impactful signing for their respective team?
It's a tricky one, because I think if both players go back to what they were in their previous spells, and admittedly we had a larger sample size with Pogba than we did with Lukaku. Lukaku only had 2 seasons with Inter, but even then, in those 2 seasons, they finished as runners-up. They got to the Europa League final in the first year, and then the second season, obviously they won the Scudetto and by 12 points. If it's the Lukaku that we saw, not the year just gone with Chelsea, but the previous year, dovetailing with Lautaro Martinez, he could be devastating. But it's not through lack of goals that Inter didn't win the league title. They just had a few blackout moments here and there and went missing midway through the season. There were some questionable substitutions from Simone Inzaghi. So I don't think that Lukaku is necessarily the player that Inter needs to bridge the gap, any gap that might exist with Milan after last season. I think, as I said, there were 3 teams in the hunt last season. So his signing will certainly improve Inter, I think, but to what extent, I'm not sure. He does know the club very well. He knows his strike partner very well. He's always been a player that seems to thrive on being full of self-confidence, being in a place where he feels loved. So I think from that perspective, it's a no-brainer from Inter. It was a case of the opportunity was there to sign him. Let's definitely bring him in. So it's a good piece of business. Pogba is a player I absolutely adore, and I think he would bore the brunt of criticism at Manchester United and almost became the scapegoat for any troubles they've had in recent years. And he's exactly the sort of player Juventus need. You know, the big issue for Juventus in recent seasons has been how little contributions they have from midfield in terms of goals. Mm-hmm. You know, Rabiot didn't score a single goal last season. Arthur, obviously, that's not his game. Aaron Ramsey was always injured. He should have been one of those pitching in. McKennie, I think, got 5 in his first year, but obviously he was out a lot injured last season. Then they lost Chiesa. You know, it depends. If they're going to play a 4-4-2, then you're hoping that the wide players pitch in as well. If they're going to play a 4-3-3, then obviously you still need those wide forwards. But you do need goals from midfield. And the best thing about Pogba is he's so good at shooting from distance that defences can now no longer sit as deep against Juventus. Mm-hmm. Because if they do so, then there's the danger of someone scoring from the edge of the box like Pogba. So therefore, if they have to play a slightly higher line, then that will make it easier for them to create chances and break down teams. I don't think we're going to see Juventus struggle in the final third anywhere near the same way that they did in the season just gone. And I think Vlahovic is going to have had a full preseason. He's had 6 months in the team as it is already. I expect to see Juventus a lot stronger 15 points stronger at least, and right in the hunt. And I think Pogba again is a signing that is absolutely made for Juventus. He knows the club, he knows the league. With the greatest of respect to Serie A, and I'm the first person being a cheerleader for Serie A. The level is lower than the Premier League, so Pogba will come in as a genuine star, even though he was that when he first signed for Manchester United. And I think he will certainly be one of those players that makes a big splash. So I think it's really exciting. It's great to see these guys back in Serie A. And who cares how the deals have come about? But, you know, right. Ultimately, the fact is Pogba and Lukaku are going to be back in Serie A from what, as you said, it's not done yet. I think Lukaku was announced today by Inter, but as of when we're recording, Pogba was still waiting for the announcement video, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I've been saying on my podcast, I think Pogba is the missing piece that Juve's been looking for. The lack of production from that midfield, as you mentioned as well, it's been killing them. And yeah, who cares whether it's a loan deal, a free transfer, whatever. The point is, next season, we'll get to watch these players competing in Serie A, and that's all you could ask for. Speaking about one of Pogba's former teammates at Juve, Paulo Dybala, he still does not have a home. And it seems like almost every minute I refresh Gazzetta dello Sport or something, there's a new story or twist with Dybala. And the latest is perhaps like Inter are going to, you know, pass on him. Perhaps obviously they have to try to sell a few of their other attacking players. Milan have been interested. I mean, he's been linked to Roma. He's even been linked to Napoli. In your opinion, where do you think is the best landing spot within Italy for Dybala?
Yeah, I would have said Inter until they made that Lukaku signing, and then even in the wake of the Lukaku rumors, and when it seemed that he was certainly and definitely going to be signed, I think I still thought that the Inter were making the noises whereby they thought they were going to sign him, and then it became this devastating prospect of, you know, Lautaro, Lukaku and Dybala. And, you know, you not only had the sort of lunar aspect, Lukaku and Lautaro knowing each other, but also Lautaro and Dybala knowing each other from the national team. And that was a frightening prospect. And, you know, and then you start to think, how competitive could Inter be in Europe? It's only natural that he, being on a free transfer, he expects to command a big contract. And that's understandable. And certainly he's going to want to command a lot more than any offer that was made to him at Juventus. Otherwise, he would have stayed there. So it would be a big volte-face. You know, he would have to almost go away with his tail between his legs if he ends up accepting similar money to that which was offered by Juventus in the first place. Right. So I think the best place for him is Serie A. His whole career has been in Serie A. You know, we're bursting on the scene with Palermo and then that great move to Juventus. Years ago, and I think it's unfortunately a sign of how injuries have halted his progress. And I do think it's simply down to injuries. I don't think he's got any worse at all. I think he's just lacked continuity and minutes. But years ago, you know, Barcelona and Real Madrid would have been biting your hand off to sign Dybala. And I'm not sure. Well, Barcelona have their financial issues now, and Real Madrid seem to have a different policy now where they want to target younger players. So as a result, I think the only place for him is Italy. And then you're looking at who has the financial firepower to bring him in. Milan possibly, but as we've already discussed, they have a certain limit they don't want to necessarily go above. And they're also seeming to be targeting younger players who they feel they can develop and win now and also then grow as a team and potentially sell on at a later date. Roma initially showed some interest, but they seem to have gone cold. Anytime an Argentine player of this class is linked in Napoli, there's always going to be romantic rumours there. So, you know, don't, you know, keep an eye on that as well. I have a feeling he might still end up at Inter, albeit I think they're going to have to get some big earners off the books first, the likes of Alexis Sanchez and things like that.
For sure, yeah, and I'm sure Dybala would like to know where he's going to be playing, the season starting sooner rather than later. Yeah, like you mentioned, the Napoli rumors, with the Argentine connection with Maradona, that would be special as well. So we'll certainly see where he ends up. You mentioned Milan, that's one of the teams he's been linked to. Coming off their Scudetto winning season, it seemed like they dragged their feet. It took them a while to get Maldini's new contract done. They finally just made the Origi signing official. I know they did purchase Florenzi outright from Roma as well. Are you kind of a little surprised by the lack of activity in the transfer market from Milan, considering, you know, they just won the Scudetto? I know, you know, you mentioned they feel they're a little ahead of schedule and whatnot, but are you a little surprised with the lack of activity from them so far?
Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that obviously you are hamstrung and your hands are tied from the moment that you have your technical director and your director of football who are out of contract, mm-hmm. and they don't sign a new deal until the 11th hour. Unfortunately, they're out of contract at the end of June. Pre-season for Milan started yesterday. But there's a lot of factors that played into that. There's new ownership group, and I know for a fact that the new ownership wanted to have a look at all existing staff on the payroll, from everything from the footballing side of things to every other department in the club. And so naturally, then you start to assess things. And of course, when you come into a new business, and football clubs are business, you also occasionally want to install some of your own men in key positions. So I don't know whether they considered doing that or not. But for everyone that's associated with Italian football, that knows Paolo Maldini, that knows the job he and Ricky Masada have done, it seemed a no-brainer. But, these things take time, unfortunately. The good thing is that Milan do have that continuity at the technical level. Paolo Maldini said, we'll make up the ground. Don't worry about that. We'll catch up. And I think an important thing, I was actually commentating on some of Milan's first day in pre-season yesterday. And mm-hmm. what you forget is Simon Kjær is now fit again. Ante Rebic looks like, hopefully, he's over some of his injury concerns. They've got Yassine Adli, who was signed the previous year but spent the season on loan at Bordeaux. Mm-hmm. Tommaso Pobega has come back from his loan at Torino. So there are new faces already. But of course, the fans, having won the Scudetto, had these very ambitious targets, want to see the club sign, Charles de Ketelaere and Renato Sanchez and players like that. And it's not as easy as that, because there's stern competition. I think everyone in football will admit that when you win a title, that's when you need to keep improving and getting better and bolstering the squad. And Milan will know that. So I expect them to do plenty of business over the next 4 or 5 weeks. And I do think they need to get stronger in certain areas of the pitch. I still think a centre forward, yes, they signed Divock Origi, as you said, but I think they really need someone who's a guarantee of 20 goals where possible. And yes, the defence is very solid. As to whether they're going to be as solid this season remains to be seen, because it's like anything, players' forms can peak and trough. And so I think Pierre Kalulu is a fabulous footballer. I think Shikau Tomori too, Calabria, Teo Hernandez. On paper, it's a brilliant defence. Mm-hmm. But they have to confirm it again. And of course, other teams will be looking at possible flaws. And they'll be thinking, where can we target Milan? So I do think they are the team to beat on the basis that they're the ones that wear the Scudetto on their shirt. But as ever, in any Serie A season, there are 3 or 4 teams that could definitely win the title.
And I'll get you out of here with this. One of the new teams in Serie A is Monza, the old team of Berlusconi and Galliani, back at it. They've had a pretty active offseason so far, signing guys like Sensi, Cataboni. They're supposed to be signing Pessina soon. That deal could be close, according to reports. How excited are you to see this Monza team compete in Serie A? I mean, they're targeting Icardi as well. And what do you make of their summer mercato so far, especially targeting this, trying to build this all Italian team almost?
No, I think it's a fabulous story. It's amazing to see the appetite and the hunger that Berlusconi and Galliani still have. It was a case of that Berlusconi felt he could no longer financially compete. I think it became a time, and a bit like I was saying about Insigne earlier, I think he became a bit fed up, a bit jaded with the whole situation, and they found a new lease of life with Monza. And for a while, it seemed like they were going to have a series of near misses. And, eventually they had to come up via the playoffs this time around. But they will get financial backing. There is a lot of enthusiasm. It's not the biggest place in the world. Monza is basically a satellite town of Milan, for those that aren't aware of it. I mean, you can literally get to Monza in 10, 15 minutes on the train. So it's going to be a very interesting dynamic with so many teams from Lombardy as well. We've got Cremonese too, but obviously Atalanta, Milan, Inter. As you said, there's some very exciting signings. Andrea Carboni, who impressed when I saw him at Cagliari. Andrea Ranocchia as well. It looks like Matteo Pessina, who's from Monza as well. So that would be a hometown signing. That would certainly be a popular move. They've got the financial power to do it, and they seem to be signing intelligently. It's not a case of they're just going to bring in an array of unknown foreign quantities. They're bringing in guys that have played in the league or still playing in the league, or who for whatever reason, Ranocchia's time is up at Inter, but he can still do a very good job. You know, Carboni is available simply because Cagliari went down. That doesn't make him a bad defender.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all of those different things. If you can get Mauro Icardi, then you have a major coup as well. And I think a player who would score goals for anyone. So I'm very excited to see what they do. Last season, obviously, we had Venezia going down. Two of the three promoted sides actually stayed up in Empoli and Salernitana. So it's nice to see that teams are able now to bridge the gap from the second tier to the top flight. I mean, that's a slight, you could read it the other way. You could say, okay, maybe the general standard of Serie A from the mid-table teams downwards is getting more diluted.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you know, we've seen it a lot of times in recent years. Cagliari played with fire and went down. Genoa played with fire too many times and went down. Years before that, Sampdoria and Torino were you know, flirting with a relegation. So I think there's an opportunity for these teams from Serie B. And I think Monza have finally got up. And now it's a case of, okay, now we're up, we want to stay. And you only need to look at teams like Sassuolo. If you can stay for 3 or 4 years, after that, it's very difficult for teams to dislodge you.
Right. Yeah, Sassuolo's almost become a mainstay in Serie A and done a great job developing talent and you know, being competitive in this league. I can't thank you enough, Patrick, for taking the time to come on my podcast to talk about all things Serie A. Definitely looking forward to, you know, hearing your broadcast coming up in, what, just about a month, a little over a month away. It's coming up quick. Stay safe and definitely hope to talk to you again soon.
My pleasure. Always enjoy chatting to you. Cheers, Raffaele.
Thank you. Take care. All right, now on to Bide or Sell It to cover some of the storylines and rumors that have been dominating the Italian media in the world of football. Number one, Bide or Sell It. Napoli should target Cristiano Ronaldo if they could actually get him. I will buy this one. So I talked about this a little bit earlier with Patrick Kendrick during that interview. Now, look, from a realistic standpoint, does anybody really think that Napoli have any shot at signing Cristiano Ronaldo? I don't believe so. Obviously, one of the big hiccups is his salary and just the amount of money that Cristiano Ronaldo commands with that salary. And you think about, you know, what's going on with Napoli and De Laurentiis and, you know, his inability right now to get a new contract for Koulibaly, get a new contract for Dries Mertens. They weren't able to give Lorenzo Insigne, you know, the local hometown kid, the captain, a new contract because of their salary demands and what Mertens and what Koulibaly and Insigne were asking for. All combined wouldn't even equal what Cristiano Ronaldo would earn. So it's highly unrealistic, but as the statement was phrased, if it were actually possible, should they get him? Yes, I do think they should get him. I know, you know, there's people with mixed feelings about Cristiano Ronaldo. Some people think he's past his prime, he's washed up. You know, all in all, he had a pretty good season with Manchester United last year. He was still scoring, you know, right around 30 goals per season on average during his time with Juventus in Serie A. So, you know, obviously he's a little bit older now. But again, I still think he undoubtedly keeps in an amazing shape and physically fit. I know that's not everything. Eventually, father time catches up to you. But he would be an unbelievable signing. He's such a polarizing figure and such a big draw. You saw what he did for social for Juventus on social media and the new followers that they gained, the new interest that, you know, kind of surround the Juventus. Obviously, Juventus are one of the biggest clubs in the world of football already before Cristiano Ronaldo signed with them. But that signing of Cristiano Ronaldo kind of elevated them a bit more. And obviously, he could have that same effect, perhaps even greater effect for Napoli, because Napoli certainly aren't necessarily the same global brand that Juventus are. So he could have an even greater impact with Napoli. And you know, you just think about some of the big name players that have played for Napoli over there. You know, career, the history of Napoli, so many big players and so many world-class talents. But, you know, undoubtedly, he would be the biggest name there since Diego Maradona wore that Napoli shirt many, many years ago, decades ago. So it would be a massive signing. It would certainly add an intrigue of relevancy to Napoli, as I said, on a global level. Obviously, within Italy, they're extremely popular. They're well-known. They're one of the biggest clubs. But from a global level, it would elevate Napoli to a whole new another stratosphere. And I don't think from a competitive standpoint, he would hurt them by any means. Kind of like I talked about at the beginning of this podcast, you know, if Scamacca joined PSG, being around world-class talent like a Messi and seeing how he trains and he practices and the work that he puts in is unbelievable for a young player. And that's something that you just can't put a price on. And if Cristiano Ronaldo, and the way he trains and the way he works hard and keeps his body in shape and the just the all effort that he puts in to add that to that Napoli locker room, and you have a young guy like Victor Osimhen watching this, and some of the other young players on Napoli, even some of the veterans on Napoli, even someone like Koulibaly, assuming he stays with Napoli, who's an established veteran, one of the best defenders in the world, has been for a long time. You know, even just for those guys, seeing a guy like Cristiano Ronaldo train, it's invaluable what he could bring from that standpoint. And on the field, I still think he could score easily 25 goals in Serie A. And obviously, Napoli are in the Champions League. They're hoping to again, finish top four, qualify for the Champions League again next year. I'm sure they'd like to get out of their group in the Champions League. We have to see what the group draw is. But there's certainly, you know, high hopes in season two under Luciano Spalletti. And we all know how close they were to, you know, competing for the Scudetto and how long they were in that race. And you know, I'm sure there's some belief within that Napoli locker room that, hey, why can't we take that next step to try to catch Inter, to try to catch Milan this upcoming season? And, you know, if you plug in Cristiano Ronaldo, you plug in a potentially 25-goal scorer along with Victor Osimhen, I don't see how you could sell that. So that's why I buy it. I definitely think if there is that possibility that they could sign Cristiano Ronaldo, they should. De Laurentiis should get it done. But do I think it's going to happen? Never in a million years do I think it will happen. But if the possibility were there to get it done, yes, Napoli should definitely do it. All right, number two, buy or sell it. The City Football Group takeover at Palermo is a good thing. I will buy this one. So it just became official the other day that, actually on July 4th, that the City Football Group, that obviously most notably owns Manchester City, have purchased a majority stake ownership in Palermo. I think the number is believed to be around 80 or 85%. I don't remember the exact number. They also own NYCFC, one of the New York MLS-based teams here in the United States, that obviously, for those who don't follow MLS, not that I follow, but I know because I'm based here in New York, they just won the MLS Cup. So, you know, the City Football Group has had success with NYCFC. Obviously, they've had plenty of success since taking over at Manchester City, and now they are taking over Palermo. You know, Sicilian football has really fallen on a hard time past decade or so, and I actually plan on my next episode of the podcast to bring on a guest who knows a lot about Sicilian football and follows it more closely, like, you know, all the lower teams and everything, and could provide some more insight on that. But it's really fallen on some hard time, and Palermo is the biggest team in Sicily, and you know, I remember growing up watching them in Serie A and the likes of Fabrizio Miccoli and you know, you think of Paulo Dybala came from there, Edison Cavani, Balzaretti, you know, Serigu. They had so many good talents. Javier Pastore, I could go on and on. It was really a lot of fun watching Palermo, even Catania. But we'll talk about Catania next time. But, you know, they've fallen on hard time, ownership, bankruptcy. It's been a topsy-turvy ride for Palermo and their fans, and they were in the bottom of Italian football, and they have risen up to Serie B. They won the promotion playoff final in Serie C, beating Padua, and they gained promotion to Serie B. So they'll be competing in Serie B next season. No Sicilian team was higher than Serie C for the past couple of years, so it's good to see Palermo getting closer to Serie A and a potential return from there. You know, am I a Palermo fan? No, by no means, but I would love to see them back in Serie A. It's just something about them in Serie A. It's where they belong, in my opinion. And just for, again, from a Sicilian football standpoint, it'd be great to see one of those teams get back to the top flight. And they're in Serie B, and now they have some financial stability. So it's definitely a good takeover. It does not guarantee, you know, any sort of success. It does not guarantee, you know, promotion next season to Serie A or in two seasons, three. It doesn't guarantee anything in terms of on the field. But what it does promise is that there is going to be some financial stability within the club and some ownership stability within this club, and I think that's the most important thing that this team needs right now. You know, there's been several teams, if you look over the history of Serie A, that on field there's no issues, the talent is there, there's talented players on the field, there's a good system in place in terms of the actual culture of the football itself, but it's, you know, from a management standpoint, it's from an ownership standpoint that cripples some of these teams historically. You think about Napoli, they're a team that went bankrupt many years ago. Catania falling on hard time, as I mentioned. Palermo, there's so many. And that stems from ownership issues and management issues. So this City takeover definitely provides that level of stability. So it's undoubtedly a good one and a good thing for Palermo. And I'm really excited to see what they'll be able to do with this, with the club. And you know, just how long will it take them to get back into Serie A? Because I have no doubt that, you know, sooner rather than later, we will see Palermo back competing in Serie A. Again, that does not mean it will happen in this upcoming season. It'll certainly take that City Football Group some time to, you know, get in there, get acclimated with everything within Italian football, get acclimated with what they're dealing with and what they're looking at. Obviously, they've done their vetting from, you know, a book standpoint, a financial standpoint before they took over this club. But now, you know, the nitty gritty stuff is going to take place in the on-field impact that they're going to be able to make by signing certain players and being able to pay certain players with their deep pockets. Obviously, they're not sinking, you know, Manchester City type money into this club. But again, the financial stability is perhaps one of the most important things that, you know, a club like Palermo needs, and one of the reasons why they've fallen on hard times. And again, we're at the bottom of Italian football, and it's good to see them back in Serie B. This is definitely a great move. So 100% I buy this City Football Group takeover at Palermo as a good thing for them. So that will do it for the 75th episode of the Calcio Corner podcast. I hope you have enjoyed it. A special thank you to Patrick Kendrick taking the time to come on this episode. Once again, please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and Audioboom, just about anywhere you can get your podcast. Feel free to leave a rating and comment. That'd be greatly appreciated to help us grow. Feel free to spread the word of the Calcio Corner podcast to any friends, family members that you think would enjoy a Calcio-centric podcast. And until next time, guys, ciao.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Calcio Corner podcast with your host, Raffaele. If you've enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have Leaf Filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A Leaf Filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install Leaf Filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, Leaf Filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.